Your Honor.
Mr. Lawson, I think you want to go through everything again, you said?
I would, Mr. President, I would recommend we start over at the approval, call the meeting to order and approve the agenda.
Call meeting to order January 26, 2021. The first thing is approve the agenda. We want to take off the item of proposed zoning ordinance introduction. Entertain a motion to amend the agenda. Motion, Mr. Hudson, second, Mr. Riley. To amend the agenda as read. Any questions? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Schaefer.
No.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Riley, I vote yes. Had the minutes of January 12, 2021. Anybody have any questions, concerns, corrections? Seeing none, they will stand approved. Mr. Moore, you have correspondence?
Yes, Mr. President. We have a letter from Harry K. Foundation and thanking council for its support with the Help Harry Halt Hunger in Delaware program. There was also a letter from CDAC in support of CPACE that all of you received. I've also had two letters handed to me from the League of Women Voters of Sussex County and the Delaware Prosperity Partnership supporting the CPACE program.
Thank you, sir. Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Move to public comment. Anybody in the audience want to come to comment? 3 minutes. Anybody? Anybody? Operator, you check online, see if anyone's online for public comment, please.
If anyone has joined via the conference line and would like to make public comment, dial 5-star. If anyone has joined via the conference line and would like to make public comment, please dial 5-star. At this time, we have no one who wishes to speak.
Thank you, operator. We're going to close public comments. We're going to move on the agenda. We're going to go next to we have Mr. Hastings, I think, online standing by for his Board of Adjustment introduction and nominee and interview. Mr. Lawson, if you take that, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, today we will have the public interview of the Board of Adjustment nominee, Mr. John Travis Hastings. Due to some COVID concerns, Mr. Hastings is joining us virtually. You can see him on the screen now. Welcome, Mr. Hastings, to our meeting, and thank you for your willingness to participate virtually in this interview. We have a vacancy in the District 5 Board of Adjustment position, and Mr. Riley has nominated Mr. Hastings. Per Delaware code, we must conduct a public interview. Council has the questionnaire that Mr. Hastings submitted for the position, and unless there are any questions, I'm going to begin the interview. Mr. Hastings, can you hear me okay?
I can go.
Okay. So we have a series of questions that we will ask you, and you will respond. And if the council has any additional questions or follow-up questions, we will address those as well. I'll begin. Please provide a narrative of your background and experience and why you want to serve as an appointed member of the Board of Adjustment.
Pass them down.
Okay. Well, I've been a full-time farmer since and 2000 from the University of Delaware. Married with three children, 15 to 6. Raised in the city of the University of Delaware. And I just, as a farmer, I just think it's important my family to protect the rights of farmers and to protect the ability to make a living from farmers.
All right, thank you. Next question, have you ever served on any boards or commissions that have decision-making authority? If yes, please describe your experience in serving.
Okay, I'm currently on three boards. Right now, I'm a board member of the Laurel Grain Company, which is a grain company here in Laurel. I'm vice president of the Mardell Woodlawn Association, which is a promotion board, and I'm also a director on Mid-Atlantic Farm Credit.
Okay, thank you. Next question. One of the statutory requirements of the Board of Adjustment, of a Board of Adjustment member, is that they be persons having knowledge and experience to pass upon planning and zoning problems in connection with urban and rural development. Please describe your knowledge and experience in planning and zoning within Sussex County.
I have basic knowledge of planning and zoning laws. That's something that we definitely need more experience on. My experience is strictly dealing with farm-related issues and land property rights.
Okay, thank you. Next question. The board is an administrative body acting as a quasi-judicial role. As part of your duties, the board hears applications for variances and special use exceptions, as well as appeals on administrative decisions. In analyzing these applications, the board is required to review the applications pursuant to certain criteria. Do you feel you have the knowledge and experience to apply certain legal criteria to analyze these applications?
That's something also that I would need more education on, but feel like I can get caught up pretty quick with the council on that, if those issues.
Okay. Next question. The Board of Adjustment meets on Mondays every other week, with a regular meeting scheduled at normally 5 p.m. in council chambers in Georgetown. On occasion, these meetings extend into late evening hours. In addition, occasional special meetings and workshops are scheduled that may require your attendance. Are you able to fulfill this requirement and attend the necessary meetings?
Yeah, I have no conflict. We have all meetings, company meetings on Mondays, but I'm flexible on that.
Okay. Last question. As an appointed official of the board, the potential for a conflict of interest with an applicant is always present. Do you have any known or anticipated conflicts of interest that may present themselves as a member of the Board of Adjustment that would affect your ability to serve?
No. I have family in the work. I don't think they have many issues that some of them come in front of the Board of Adjustment. I mean, that would be something that I would have to excuse my presence if that came up, I guess.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hastings. For the record, you did answer yes on that portion of the questionnaire, but I believe you have explained your yes answer with your explanation. Members of council, that concludes the six questions that we have presented to the applicant. Are there any follow-up questions for Mr. Hastings?
I'd like to make a comment. So, first of all, Travis, thank you for your willingness to serve. And sorry you couldn't be here in person this morning, but we certainly understand the situation. And it's just good talking to you. I will point out that during the meetings, there is an attorney available, just as we have Mr. Moore here, available to assist us with some of the legal aspects of our position. But you'll have that available as well. And there will be some orientation and, helping you to get up to speed. So that, have no worries there. But the biggest thing is your willingness to serve, and so I thank you for that. I don't really have any other questions. I feel comfortable and confident that you'll be a good addition to the board. My goal was to find somebody that understood property rights and was willing to, come from that perspective, valuing the property rights, but also understanding that, there is zoning law in and we need to respect that, and at times there's going to be the necessary decision that may not be unpopular, but it's the right thing to do. So just in concluding, thank you for being with us this morning, and thank you for stepping up.
Any more questions of council?
Thank you.
Questions of council, anybody? Okay, we're good.
Would you like to consider a motion?
Please read your motion.
Be it moved, the Sussex County Council approves the appointment of John Travis Hastings to the Sussex County Board of Adjustment, effective immediately until such time as his term expires in June 2022.
I'd like to make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Shaver.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir, and good luck to you. Mr. Lawson, you're still up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Council. And just to confirm Mr. Riley's comments, we will have a quick orientation with our legal staff and planning zoning director later this week with Mr. Hastings to get him up to speed as quickly as we can. The next board meeting is actually next Monday. Okay, Council, we are joined today by Mr. Tony DePrima, Executive Director of Delaware Sustainable Energy Utility. Mr. DePrima is going to make a presentation, and we're going to have a discussion related to property assessed clean energy, known as PACE financing. Tony, welcome. Thanks for being here. I think your PowerPoint's up and ready.
Yep. Great. Do I control it?
You do.
Mouse.
Great. Or keyboard. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for having me again, actually. For some of you may recall, I was here like 3 years ago when we were actually advocating for the legislation to adopt clean energy financing, commercial clean energy financing here in Delaware. And I'm happy to say that, obviously, the legislation passed. We did get some bipartisan support at that time. In fact, Gary Simpson, who was the Senate Minority Leader, voted for this legislation, as did Senator Lopez. And then on the House, I was really happy when Representative Danny Short, a Minority Leader, voted for this legislation. So today, you each have a folder with my PowerPoint presentation. You also have a presentation from Alyssa Roth, who cannot be here today, but she is on the phone, and she'll talk you through that presentation. She's going to give you some real examples of how PACE works across the country. She works for a firm that does financing here in Delaware. And so you'll hear from her a little later. I like to put on my first slide the map of the United States, and the states that are in green are states that have adopted PACE programs and have active PACE financing. And the reason I like to show this slide is because PACE is relatively new. It really started in 2009, so we're just over the 10-year mark for PACE financing in this country. And it's spread, as you can see, across the country. And what I like about this map is, you know, it's spread in both red states and blue states, right? This is the kind of economic development program that lots of legislatures get behind. And they generally get behind it because it is voluntary on the part of local governments. They get behind it because there's generally very low risk to the local governments, and there's no tax money put into the program at all. So again, I'm going to just start with a refresher on exactly what PACE is. I also want to mention that our commercial attorney is here, Brent Shaffer, who has helped a lot in creating the legislation, working with Newcastle County to become a participating county. They did last year, and then also Kent County joined this month. So Brent has been there the whole way, and I like when Brent's here because he gets all the tough questions. I give him tough questions. So, and also there are a number of folks in the audience that may want to speak later or may be able to answer questions better than I regarding why they're interested in this financing or why it's important. So again, what is PACE? I can't emphasize enough, this is a commercial PACE program. There are some states that do residential. This is not a residential program. This is for non-residential properties, which does include multifamily. So those are generally considered, if the five units or more, that would be allowed. So again, this is an economic development strategy that has environmental benefits for commercial buildings. It secures private investment. So again, can't emphasize this enough. It is not SEU's money. It is private sector financing to finance energy savings and renewable energy projects through voluntary property assessments. And I want to emphasize voluntary, and I'll get into that a little bit better. The bottom line, this program has spread across the country and is now spread to two counties in Delaware because it does help with the businesses, the commercial property owners' bottom line. This is ultimately a economic development program that these property owners see as adding value to their building, and you will see some other benefits to the business owner. So again, what qualifies for this? Again, any kind of equipment that saves energy. Most of what we have been seeing is a lot of restoration or replacement of very expensive heating and air conditioning systems in commercial buildings. Could be completely relamping as everybody's going to LED lights. Efficient roofing systems, efficient motors are all part of this. But it can also go for renewable energy. So solar systems are financeable through PACE. And again, I don't have a slide for this, but just about any kind of non-residential building qualifies. So across the country, the most popular types of buildings using this are office buildings, hotels, retail, shopping malls. We're seeing some agriculture across the country. So again, and then more important, not more important, but also nonprofit organizations, sometimes this gives them access to financing that they may have difficulty financing. It, for some, it's considered off the books financing because it's like an assessment. And that helps with nonprofits that are looking to, that can't really add to their debt. So, so I just want to emphasize that. So some basics, right? So in this program, the financing dollars, again, come from private sources. For a participating county, the assessment is placed to pay the debt service similar to a property assessment. So in this program, the county collects the debt service. County collects the debt service. So when the county mails out a tax bill and there's been a voluntary participation in the program, there's actually a line item on the county tax bill where then the debt service is paid annually through their tax payment. Those payments are then split off, and under our current agreement, those payments will then go to my organization, and then we would be responsible for paying the borrowers. So that's the way, the mechanics of it behind it. And again, some of the special things when you make a loan into a transfer into an assessment, it survives the sale of a property, so the property owner could transfer, just like an assessment, to the next owner. That adds value to it. We'll go into that a little later, why that adds value. It also ensures that, again, I've mentioned that they can be passed on to the new owner, and it can survive the sale. And again, all of these things together provide a little more security for lenders, and it allows for very long-term financing by surviving the sale. So again, why do lenders like this? You're going to hear from Alessa. She represents a lender who works across the country, but it builds stronger collateral. It's a little better creditworthiness. The default rates are very low nationally, and we'll get a little bit more into that. And again, one of the unique things when you become an assessment, depending on the leases on a rental property like a shopping center where you have tenants, the expenses and the value can then get passed on to tenants in a commercial building. And then this has really opened up new markets across the country. Again, I mentioned this just started in 2009. We're close to $2 billion in investments across the country through PACE. So again, just wanted to mention that. So why would a building owner, right? So you're a commercial building owner, and you may hear from some today. Why do this? Well, the assessment allows it to go to long-term paybacks. Our law actually allows, I think, to 25 years, but typically up to 20 years in funding. You generally can't get that from a commercial bank. So the assessment allows it to be long-term financing because the assessment stays with the property. Again, because it's assessed, oftentimes you can do 100% financing this way. and it does allow for positive cash flow. So again, in this lending, what we're really looking at is what's either the income generated from the solar system, or how are the utility bills lowered through the assessment. And the debt service generally is paid for either through the income earned through the renewable energy or through the energy savings. So really key here. That often makes the project cash positive. So people will lend to less than what is being saved on the property. And again, I've already mentioned that PACE transfers on sale. That's of interest to building owners. And again, I've already mentioned the share cost. So those things all together, for the same reasons lenders like it, building owners like it for the same time. I also want to emphasize that, and you know, so what is actually being financed here? So in new construction, there's a cap. You can't fund more than 20% of the value of the new construction, and we deduct things like the land cost. For existing buildings where they're going in for renovation, we're only financing the measures that are there. So we only finance an new HVAC system. We only finance new boilers. So it's only the measure that's financed, and then we look at the savings from installing that new measure, and we look at that next to what the debt service would be. And so that's how it's cash positive. So then the next question becomes, yeah, well, why are mortgage lenders giving consent? So this is voluntary. You cannot enter this program unless the underlying mortgage holder consents. There's forms for that that they have to fill out. So why would an underlying mortgage lender allow a PACE assessment to sort of get in front of it, right? Why would that happen? Well, it's happening all over the country. There are literally hundreds of financing banks that have allowed these PACE assessments, have signed off on them. One, it makes the lenders collateral. I've lent on a building, and now this investor is coming in and improving it. It also improves the borrower's cash flow. So if the borrower's cash flow is better, then the debt to the mortgage holder is better, right? Only the PACE assessments in arrears is collectible. So this is an important point. Unlike a mortgage, if there's a default, the whole mortgage comes due, or a commercial loan. In these assessments, because they are assessments, the only thing that comes due is the amount that would be in arrears. So again, the amount due in that system becomes relatively small. So the mortgage holders understand that, and they understand that if they needed to step in this situation to rescue the property, just like in a tax sale, they can do that at a minimal cost to preserve the value. And lenders can always say no. So again, that's why mortgage lenders generally give their consent to these things. They're trying to help their clients, put their clients in a better situation. So then it comes down to local governments. Like, why do local governments support this? So really, this is an economic development, right? This is another way of financing. This is just another way of financing projects in a county. So it is economic development. There are jobs behind these construction jobs. And so whenever there's some sort of construction, you can see that there are jobs to the construction industry, or it could be the solar industry. But for the most part, most of the lending goes to energy efficiency projects in existing buildings. There are reduced CO2 emissions. I mean, that's why the SCU is involved in this, right? We're about energy efficiency in Delaware. So we're even here because of reduced CO2 emissions, reduced energy spending by Delawareans. There's no tax money involved, so you're not at risk for any of your public dollars. There are fees involved to help support the costs of the assessor. And again, throughout this, and we can go into more detail, but taxes are always collected first. So you guys, we get paid on your tax assessment before we get paid. So that's something we've agreed to. So I want to go into the lower risk, because I think that's really why we're getting a lot of governments sign into this. There's low risk here. You know, your tax receipts are secure. And so I like to say there's sort of this layer of defense that you have to make any kind of loss on future tax collection, maybe in a default hearing, somewhat implausible. So first thing we need, you know, I always say is, look, we need to understand that across the country, commercial defaults are very rare. Rarely do commercial properties go into a default. And one of the folks in the audience, Mr. Schell, did a little research of the, I think, 136 properties that you have currently in some form of collection for taxes. There's no commercial property there. And in fact, in one of our early meetings, we talked about this, and nobody on the county team could remember a commercial property coming up. So to begin with, there are low-risk properties that are being invested in. Secondly, those folks that participate in post-lien tend to be really large properties and top-quality properties. The average loan nationally is about $750,000. That's the loan, not the value of the property. That's the amount being lent. Our first project here in Delaware amounted to, about $4.9 million in financing just for the improvements to the building, and we can talk about that later. So these tend to be big projects. And then the third layer of defense is the amount of scrutiny that happens to these projects. So first off, you have the lender. They're the ones who are really putting their money at risk. They go through a very intensive underwriting review and analysis of the deal to make sure that this is a good loan. Secondly, you have the underlying mortgage holder, right? They're going to be asked to sign off on this. They're going to do their own analysis to make sure that this loan makes sense and is a good loan. And then my organization does some analysis to make sure that it meets all the requirements of the PACE financing. So there's lots of scrutiny to make sure these loans are good loans that aren't going to default. The PACE financers, like Alyssa's firms, Mr. Roth's firms you're going to hear from, you know, they have their own requirements. Generally, the lenders are not going to lend more than 30% of a building value. They're generally not going to lend if the property is already has liabilities of the 95%. So they have their own standards that they will apply. Again, the other thing is, these are big investments. These tend to be in big investments, tend to be new construction. These add value. By adding the energy efficiency, by adding the renewable energy, you're adding value to the property. So my point being here that if a property was likely to go to default, which is we already have established is rare, this is a property that's actually more valuable than it was before the PACE loan. And so that in itself should be a factor that you should consider. And again, I've mentioned this before, but only the amount arrears is owed. So generally, it's a year's worth of debt service, not the whole amount is owed. Maybe 2 years, depending how long it takes the PACE financer to finally say, hey, you owe us some money. And again, I think Alyssa can talk a little bit about their experience in collections. So some of the key phrases here that I always like to emphasize is, you know, this is voluntary. It's voluntary on the local governments to participate. It's voluntary on a borrower. A commercial borrower has to have reasons why they want to go to PACE financing. We've gone over those. But in general, PACE financing, if you're borrowing money from different lenders, takes a certain position in what they call the capital stack, that this is a good source of capital. And I think you might hear from some folks here from Alyssa. It's voluntary on the lender. For the most part, we have five companies that have registered in Delaware to be PACE lenders. I will tell you that across the country what the pattern is and what I'd like to see is eventually the local banks and the regional banks see what's happening, right? They start to learn about PACE because they're being asked to underwrite or to approve subordination. Eventually, in other states, local banks, regional banks are becoming themselves PACE lenders. They see the value of it, and we hope that will happen here. And again, it's voluntary approval on the primary mortgage holders. So just some details on how our program works. So again, my organization, I'm here because we serve as the statewide administrator of the program. Some of our functions is to pre-qualify the project first. We make sure it meets all of the energy savings requirements of the law, all of the financing requirements of the law. We help market the program. And then once the program alone is made, we've taken the role, and this was something we negotiated with Newcastle County, is Newcastle didn't want to be involved with collecting the money and then paying the individual borrowers, right? I mean, lenders back. They just didn't want that administrative responsibility. So the way it works now is all the money collected is sent to my organization, and my organization is then responsible for making sure that the lenders get paid. So that's an administrative function that we will stick with our organization throughout. Again, the county tax services does the loan servicing. In essence, I send them the amount so we send a Excel spreadsheet to Newcastle County. We tell them which properties owe some money, where the assessment's placed. They put it into their programs and it spits out a tax bill. When that money comes in, it gets split off, it gets sent to us, and then we disperse it to the borrowers. And I also want to say, I've offered this, and I'll offer it here, there may be some startup costs for Sussex County. Maybe you've got to reprogram your software for your tax bills. We will pick up those costs as long as they're reasonable. So we'll pay for whatever expenses it may take Newcastle County just to get their systems in place, and that's in the proposed presentation. So I want to end by thanking your staff. Todd and Scott Wilcox have been great in working with drafting a participation agreement that they would feel they would offer to this council in the future if you're interested in adopting this program. So I do want to thank them for all of their efforts. And with that, unless there's direct question for me, I don't know, Todd, would you rather let Alyssa finish, or how would you like to proceed, Mr. President?
I would just let her finish up for you, then we ask questions.
Okay, great. So I believe Alyssa's on the line. And you have in your packet a paper copy of her presentation. It's the one that's a lot better looking than mine. Alyssa, are you there?
Hi.
Okay, I'm going to.
Okay, I'll make sure Vaughn gets up.
Just to frame this very quickly, my organization is called Greenwork Lenders. We are a financier exclusively of CPACE funding products. We were started in 2018 and are the leading provider of CPACE financing across the country. We've established the asset class through multiple securitizations, and we have funded over 350 CPACE projects in 20 states throughout the country. So the second slide I have here about public-private partnership really drills into the essence of what Tony was talking about in terms of local government drivers. So CPACE is a partnership between a public entity and a private entity, and in any public-private partnership, there are obligations and benefits on both sides. One of the things that makes the Delaware CPACE program so excellent is that DESEU is available to take some of those obligations off of the public entity, yet still provide all of the benefits for you. So as you mentioned, being able to remit the tax collections back to the lenders and serve in administrative capacity to review project applications and provide approval on the technical aspects of energy efficiency. All of that being said, all of the benefits to the public entity here are still maintained by the local government. So most importantly, as Tony mentioned, this is an economic development tool that attracts private investment for our property owners in Suffolk. It is 100% private capital from lenders like Greenworks and our other competitors / collaborators in the marketplace. At the end of the day, business owners that use PIG financing lower the cost of doing business in the county, directly impact their bottom line because their energy bills have decreased, therefore their cost of doing business has decreased. This attracts new businesses and property owners to do business in the county, and that results in revenue to the cities and the counties where these businesses start up operations, take on tenants, and have greater populations. Of course, there's the workforce development aspect. These are green-collar professional jobs in the construction industry, engineering, and overall building sectors. We're generally not talking about a guy with a truck. We're generally talking about accredited, professional, and certified firms that are taking on and expanding their businesses and enterprises in the local community. In this COVID environment and post-COVID environment, we've seen some really extraordinary benefits to using CPAY. So I did want to just quickly go over how we've seen this really take off. A lot of construction projects now are being funded by typical lending institutions that are set up to lend money for 5 to 8 years, perhaps. And not set up to withstand the market volatility we're seeing right now. So construction projects are being pulled out of, we're seeing a lot of stalled projects and new construction that has not been able to get off the ground. CPAY, on the other hand, is specifically set up to withstand market volatility because we are designed to lend for up to 25 years. So we are able to come in here as rescue capital, inject liquidity into ongoing projects that have stalled, and allow those business owners and property owners to reallocate the funds that they have for the energy portions of their project to other capital expenditures that need to be fulfilled. So we're seeing projects restart, get completed. We're seeing reallocated capital to pay down their mortgage lenders, to pay for cost overruns and to stabilize the property. And we're seeing a real uptick in property owners searching for capital that they can use to fill this gap. So it's really been a lifesaver for commercial properties all across the country. So the next two slides I have here are just some case studies. The next slide I have is the lender requirements. So in addition to the guardrails that the EFEU has in place to ensure the integrity of the CPAY lending properties, we have our own requirements, and all of the lenders do. All of our requirements are very similar. Of course, property owners must be current on their taxes, current on their mortgage payments, not have any involuntary liens, not be in bankruptcy, of course. And the energy audits need to be conducted by licensed engineers and reviewed by the EFEU for accuracy. In addition to that, all lenders have the requirements around loan to value. So none of us are going to lend more than 30 to 35% of a property's value. And there's also the lender consent requirement that Tony has also covered. We are very good at getting lender consent. It is not typically a barrier for us because of all those reasons that Tony had mentioned. But all that being said, it is required, and it is completely voluntary on the part of the existing debt holders. So this ensures that properties are not only underwritten by Greenland Lending, they're also underwritten by the mortgage institutions that hold any current debt on the property. Okay, so I've got a few case studies here to just show the types of properties that typically find tapes to be attractive. I'll just zoom through these. We've got the Caden, which was a historic redevelopment project. It was a dilapidated building in the center of town that we were able to come in and update the operating systems of the building to help get it off the ground and revitalize the community. The next one is Tennessee Touch. This is actually a very typical Main Street America type of building. It's a framing retail store in Maryland. They had a small retail storefront on the first floor and six or seven units of multifamily property above that. We were able to come in and help the property owner finance new windows and HVAC for his tenants to increase their comfort. They financed about $135,000 of work, and over the lifetime of those measures of the HVAC and windows, they'll save $300,000 in energy costs, a few cash flow positive from day one. The Shalom Park Senior Community in Colorado is a great project for us. This is an elder care facility. We financed just under $2 million to upgrade all of their energy systems. And help bring more comfort and also more safety to this community. And over the lifetime of this project, they'll save over $3.5 million. And that's, you know, an added $1.5 million that they can reallocate to the care and to the safety of their residents. Zion Baptist Church was a great project that we did in Washington, D.C. Again, there we see more than 200% savings on the upgrades. This church was in desperate need of income. They were struggling to stay financially afloat. And by upgrading their systems, and since we were able to finance 100% of the cost of the project, they were able to become cash flow positive immediately, start seeing cash flows in, and save the church. And then the last one I have here is the Scrub Oak Private School. This is a residential facility for young adults and children with autism. And this is actually in my hometown, so this is a project that was close to my heart. This was a refinancing, so they were able to go in, we were able to flush them with cash to refinance the energy portion of the project that had just been completed, so they could reallocate those funds to stay afloat during the COVID crisis, where the market had become completely stagnant and they weren't seeing any income. So that's it. Thank you so much for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions you have, and please reach out to me afterwards as well. Happy to answer questions about our experience as well as enforcement, anything else.
Any questions of our first two presenters so far?
I do.
Mr. Riley.
Well, thanks for the presentation. It's an intriguing concept, but I'm curious, Alyssa, what kind of financing are you lending? Is it standard bank mortgage loans, or are you issuing bonds, or how is that structured?
Sure, that's a great question. So we have several different investors at Remark, and we function as a direct lending institution. So we issue CPIC financing directly to the property owner for the clean energy portion of any construction project. Most of the time, it is not issued through a bond unless at the requirement of the municipality or the local government.
So are these loans, what sort of interest rate do you assess on these? Is it variable or fixed?
It's usually dependent upon the credit of the building as well as the term of the loan. But they are very competitive with standard banking products. They're usually a couple basis points lower than what can be offered by the market rate from the local bank.
So are they fixed or variable?
Always fixed rate, and every installment for the term of the loan is equal. So we can predict over the life of the loan for 20 to 25 years exactly how much will be owed every year.
Okay. Are they prepayable by the borrower?
Yes, they are. It's up to the borrower if they would like to prepay. That's always an option, but it will never be required. The loan cannot be accelerated or extinguished by force, but the property owner always has the option to do that.
And I see you've got a church as one of your examples, so this would be available to a faith-based organization?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Tony had mentioned that nonprofits are actually a really great market sector for faith because they don't have access to traditional means of credit. They also don't have an appetite for solar tax credits. So being able to offer CPAC is usually one of the only ways that they can access funding for clean energy projects.
So part of the benefit to you in this is that you capture the energy credits. Is that part of what makes it attractive to you?
It's not us in that scenario. We have third-party equity investors through different solar finance structures, but we facilitate that. The benefit to us is just like any lending institution, we have an interest rate that we are collecting on. But some comparable to the market, that interest rate is lower than typical lending institutions.
So to be clear, what Alyssa mentioned was because nonprofits don't pay tax, they don't take advantage of the federal tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
But if a nonprofit installs a solar system, they can certainly get the renewable energy credits go to them, and that's probably an income factor that the lender would consider. So it's just the tax credits that they
get. If they're not paying property tax, how does this get repaid?
Or do they, seeing
nonprofits like churches and so forth? I guess we just answered that question not too long ago, didn't we?
Yeah, and it's completely okay. It's not our funding, so that is completely fine.
We don't have any classes of buildings that are tax exempt from property taxes.
We do. I mean, there's some that will classify as not, not, but we would still... We would put them on the records and tax them. I mean, so, it's not a tax, it's this lien on that, so that's not a problem.
We would collect that.
We would, yep.
How about farms? Would a farm be eligible?
So, first off, I was remiss in not thanking Gina also as part of your team. Gina actually served on the early committee before we even had legislation, so she was very instrumental in trying to figure out legislation and how it would work better. So I did want to thank her. So farms. Nationally, farms do participate. There are some statistics out there. It's not one of the largest sectors. It's one of the smaller ones. I will be honest with you, here in Delaware, my organization does direct lending. It's not PACE, but we have a direct loan. We actually have a farm program. And so we've been doing quite a bit of lending to farmers for solar systems and for energy efficiency.
That's what I'm thinking, like a poultry house that wanted to convert to solar. But how would that be structured? Would they have to be incorporated or?
No, I mean, I don't have the statistics in my head, but I bet you we're close to lending money to about 20 farms, mostly poultry farms.
Under the program that we're considering?
No, so it would be under my current program. And so there's just, all I'm saying is there's an alternative program in Delaware that's very, very favorable to farmers because we have a fixed 3% interest rate. So I think if a farmer was looking at a PACE loan versus our program, they would probably go with our program. But I can't guarantee our program is going to be there forever. And one of the reasons we really got into PACE is because we can then redirect our capital other ways. We only have so much. So, you know, I'm planning for the future where, you know, PACE Lenders comes in as a primary lender here, and then we are using our dollars for other things. But right now, in this moment, I think as long as the solar system doesn't go above $2 million, we have a $2 million cap for our loans. I think a farm or a farmer that's thinking about a really big system I think they would absolutely go to PACE. And perhaps Alyssa can give you some information on how PACE works for farms. I don't know if they've done any, but she might be able to help you on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a special place in my heart for agriculture, so I absolutely pursue agriculture projects proactively. We have funded several farms as well as a few greenhouse operations that are growing indoor leafy greens and other vegetables. So we have specific underwriting criteria for the agriculture sector, but we absolutely fund ag projects.
So you're offering up to 25-year lending for things such as heat pumps, motors, that don't last 25 years.
Correct. So the loans are up to 25 years. There is language in our guidelines where they do have to take into account the life cycle of the system. So oftentimes, large HVAC systems, boilers, they do have that kind of lifetime. But if it was a project that was funding something with a lower lifetime, then the term has got to match the lifetime of the loan. And again, I think Alyssa can give you the perspective on that from a lender.
Yeah, so we will always look at the cumulative lifetime of all of the members in the project, and we will never finance a term longer than the useful life of the members. The 25 number is the absolute max that we would always cap the term at.
Would the county have any ability to add additional parameters as qualifications to this program?
So, to my knowledge, across the country, there has been no conditions put on lenders that is retained by the local government. Now, one of the things in discussing with Todd, Mr. Wilcox, and Gina is, you know, we understand that you want to make sure that these are, you know, good quality projects. So we've agreed that if Sussex County wants to move forward, we would allow some sort of pre-application to go to the county administrator to evaluate the project and then sign off on it before everybody starts spending time and money and effort on lining up the actual details of the project. But in terms of actually putting a condition on a loan, I think that we would get very few lenders who would be willing to go forward, because it does cost money to tee these projects up. There are investments up front, and then to have added conditions that they don't know about, I think would be looked upon not very favorably, and I think we'd have a hard time having lenders interested.
See, what I'm thinking about is, say, for we have a large apartment complex that is considering this program, could we make a condition that they incorporate a certain number of affordable housing units or workforce housing units within that complex in order to qualify for the program? Could we do that?
So I can't say here that we would agree to that kind of condition. And just as my background, I was a former planning director up in Dover, so I'm pretty good at planning. You know, the right place to do that kind of stuff is through your zoning and planning ordinances. That's where that really, the law really backs up those kind of conditions and could allow you to do certain conditions under whatever your zoning ordinances are. This is, quite frankly, not the place to be putting zoning-like conditions on a financing deal. I mean, we wouldn't do that for a bank and again, it's, keep in mind, it's their money. So that's our position. We couldn't accept something like that.
Okay. I just wanted to, you know, throw it out there and clarify it.
Right. Yeah. No.
So you say it's low risk to the county. Can you describe what risk it could represent to the county?
So some people have argued that, let's say there is a default on a commercial property, and we've already established that's pretty low risk. But let's say there is one, then it could be argued that now it goes to some sort of sale as a tax sale, right? Not a sale by us. But let's say they're not paying us and they're not paying you, so now it goes to a sale. Some people argue in theory that, well, if there's a bidder on a tax sale, there's a bidder for this property, they're not going to bid as much knowing that there's an assessment on this property. So in fact, they may bid lower, you may not get your full tax amount. And I emphasize, I think that's a theory, because I think to counter that theory is the reality that only for us, it's only the amount that's in arrears. So it's unlikely that an underlying mortgage holder, if there is one, would allow a property to be sold for taxes and assessments without stepping in and rescuing that property first. And I think that, and I think the other point that I made is, you know, these properties are, I can argue that, hey, this property just went through a large loan, right? They improved their boiler. They improved their lights, so their modern lighting. So technically, if somebody was, this thing went to a sheriff's sale, there's been added value to that, right? And I think the other thing is, keep in mind that the only thing that's in default for us is just that 1 year, maybe 2 years of debt service payment. So I think while there's a theory out there that you might get less value at a tax sale, I think that it's a low chance of going to a tax sale, and there's a counter, I call it counter balancing theory that, hey, the property will be worth more, so you're going to get more at a tax sale. Or that the property is likely to be rescued because the amount owed is low. So you can weigh those two sides of that argument.
Any other potential risks that you're aware of?
Can I just add one thing to that, which is you're absolutely right on everything you said, but a reminder that this county will always be made whole first. So even if the bid on that property is less than what was expected, the C-case lender would take the hit there. The county will always be made whole from all the proceeds that are recouped first. And then secondarily, there's no evidence that C-case properties with C-case sell for less. In fact, on the contrary, there's a few studies, and there have been several properties with C-case financing that have been sold to owners, and they've all sold for more. They've never sold for less. So I think it's a concern that is primarily unfounded.
Any other risks you're aware of?
I can't think of any other arguments regarding running the risk to the county since there's no tax dollars in here.
And my understanding that this would be extremely low cost to the county to administer.
So again, there is a small fees to the counties for, and it's an upfront fee. In fact, I think Gina was one of the ones who negotiated that. In a lot of other states, there's an annual fee that the county collects for servicing loans from each borrower. And through some, from talking, we sort of agreed that, you know, it'd be a lot less administrative work for you to worry about, the county to worry about billing every year for an annual, small annual fee. So we collect a larger fee up front. It was, we sort of did the calculations on net present value. And it's weighted on the size of the, or the term of the loan. So the longer the term, the bigger the fee the county gets. So the top end of that is $1,500 for a more than 20-year, I think, loan. So that's an upfront fee. And then, of course, we would be willing to pick up any startup cost to the county.
One more, and I apologize for monopolizing the time.
Take your time.
Should some future council decide that they wanted to exit the program, they would have the ability to discontinue it if they chose?
So that is a question and a suggestion that your attorney has put forward to us, and we basically agreed to that. I don't know if Scott or Brent wants to address it, but the bottom line is we're okay with that on new ones, but you would have an obligation ongoing for anybody that you've approved. And my other feeling was if this action has to get approved by resolution. So Kent County, Newcastle County have model resolutions they passed, and then the resolution adopts the participating agreement and then authorizes the administrator to sign that. But where I was going is that since it's adopted by resolution, we think it should be the decision to pull out should be by resolution. We want to know that the whole council agrees that you should pull out.
But it's, and I'm not saying there ever would come to that, but just reserving the option.
No, I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing that you should all reserve for yourself. Our only thing is we'd like to know that it's been approved by the whole council.
Anything else?
I apologize.
No, you take it down.
Great question, thank you.
Shaver.
Mr. President, I really just have a observation. Mr. Riley asked all the questions I was going to ask, and I just wanted to be clear that everyone does understand that the ag industry can use this program. And I think it's important that we make every effort to promote green energy opportunities in Sussex County. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Mr. Primo, you?
No, sir, there's some folks here. I don't know if you want to call them up or not, or, you know.
If they feel a need to be part of your presentation, they certainly can.
Thank you, I'm done, thank you.
Anyone out there want to step forward and make a comment? If not, we're fine, I guess. Okay. Seeing none, everybody's good? Okay. I would suggest, I think, Mrs. Jennings, if I'm wrong, I think there's a final document somewhere around that came in last night or something at 4 o'clock for you guys to review.
Right, I did put a draft in your packet. There has been changes since that draft.
Okay.
As of last night, so we'll have a new draft. If you want it on the new on another agenda, we'll have a resolution at that time.
Well, I'm going to say my comment is going to be, I suggest that when you get the final document, mm-hmm. send that to all the council as a final document, and then they can review it. If they have any questions, ask questions.